Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on an extra day at Wimbledon. Middle Sunday is up and running. In fact, it's pretty much nearly over. We've had 5 or 6 hours of tennis, richly entertaining tennis, and Catherine Whittaker, Simon Briggs from The Telegraph, and myself, David Law, are here to discuss it all. First things first, Catherine, we've seen another John Isner-style epic, but this time he hasn't won, and this time it lasted at least a reasonable amount of time and not a ridiculous amount of time. What was it, 1917, something like that, in the fifth set? But it was eventually Joe Wilfred Tsonga who won through.
Still a pretty ridiculous amount of time, David. It's just that the benchmark Isner has set himself is quite so preposterous. I feel for both of them. I almost feel for Tsonga more, because how can he not be shot now for his fourth round match against Richard Gasquet tomorrow? I know Gasquet had to resume his match today as well, but in nowhere near the same fashion that Tsonga did. I mean, if he's able to mount any kind of a challenge against Gasquet, I will be mightily impressed. But yeah, I guess Isner is tasting the other side of the cherry at the moment, isn't
he? Maybe it was just adrenaline, but at the end of that match, Tsonga was amped. He was doing the full pogo, bouncing around the court, pointing at his back and engaging with the crowd. And Simon, this is the sort of day when you can engage with the crowd, isn't it? It's been fantastic having this sort of first come, first serve crowd in, and you can see how much they're all enjoying it.
Yeah, that was court two.
Yeah, court two, yeah.
So court two had a great day, court one had a great day. Centre court perhaps not quite as good as those two, just as it turned out. The two women's matches went quite quickly. And Burdich now, is he through against Zverev?
He's two sets up. Zverev has just won the third, okay. So that'll go on. But, you know, I know what you mean. I mean, I was doing court one today, and I was on the Svetlana Kuznetsova-Sloane-Stevens match. That was fabulous. 2.5 hours, 5-2 up Stevens in the third, eventually Kuznetsova came back to win it. Great atmosphere. They applauded each other off the court, standing ovation from the crowd, and then they had Kyrgios to enjoy against Lopez,
which was awesome tennis, and great to see Kyrgios playing at that level. And I'm sure we're about to talk about his press conference, which was certainly the most controlled, the most intelligent, and perhaps even one of the funniest press conferences that he's given. Absolutely top drawer, shows how quickly he's maturing and how we need to kind of put this image of him as a hopeless case behind us, because he's really moving on.
Very interesting, isn't it? I've just took 10 minutes to go into that press conference and commentated on sections of that match that he had against Lopez, and he was grouchy last night. I think we were all a bit grouchy. I certainly was in the sort of gloom and darkness, and he just lost a second set tiebreak. He said some things he really shouldn't have said. Not the first time we've said that, but today he was like a newborn chick. He just sort of came out onto the court. Nice sunny day, crowd in, his kind of crowd. You know what it reminded me of, Simon, was Hisense Arena at the Australian Open, now that they've turned that into a sort of ticketless arena, and you just get anybody off the street in who fancies to come to watch. They stick Kyrgios on time after time because he loves it. He loves the crowd. And the very first point of the match, Kyrgios is loading up into his serve. And just as he's about to serve, somebody pops a champagne cork that everybody in the stadium can hear. And Kyrgios stopped for dramatic effect and just paused and didn't move for about 5 seconds whilst preparing to serve. And everybody laughed. And he'd got them in the palm of his hand then. And you could see how the whole crowd was just thinking, this guy's fun. And Kyrgios suddenly didn't have a Dustin Brown to sort of outdo him. He could be the centre of attention. And he played like a dream. Lopez played well. Kyrgios was too much for him, passing him one after another with backhand cross-court passing shots. I think I called them off-the-charts worldies, Simon. And you didn't really understand what I was on about.
No, I was like, is a worldie like a groundie only better? Anyway, it was great to watch and quite worrying for those who are hoping for Murray to take advantage of the no-lexit, or whatever we're going to call Djokovic's departure from this tournament, because he could be a serious threat tomorrow, particularly in the mood he was in tonight. He just seemed very much at one with the world, where we were used to him railing against it, aren't we?
Yeah, it's interesting, because the first moment that Kyrgios came into the press conference just now, as you say, that look of confrontation had gone from him. He was happy to sit there. He took the questions and pretty much straight batted the first half a dozen away, and then a couple came that he enjoyed and he started to engage with them, and he dropped in a few one-liners and the room started laughing rather than baiting him, which is what I think does occasionally happen with Nick Kyrgios. And I thought, finally, we're actually seeing... I don't know the guy that well. I don't know him at all. But I get the sense that he's all right. I mean, he does some terrible things on the court and off the court. I'm not going to defend them. But there's a side to him that I personally like. And it was great to see. Catherine Whittaker, you've seen the matches he's had against Murray. Can he trouble him? I mean, he's never beaten him before in a competitive match.
He's going to have to play very differently and come out with a very different demeanour to how he has done in previous matches against Andy Murray, which have frankly been disappointments up to this point. I think they've played four times and they've all been slightly damp squibs. And that's usually attributed to Kyrgios's respect, admiration, and your words, David, reverement of Andy Murray. I personally wouldn't go so far as to say reverement. We had this debate at the time. I'm not sure Nick Kyrgios reveres anybody, and nor should he, but he certainly has the utmost respect for Andy Murray, and that seems to hamper him because he feeds off this, you know, combative railing against something and feeling like the underdog, feeling like he's being beaten down, and he's not going to feel that way against Andy Murray. And I certainly am not suggesting there is any cynicism in Andy Murray's defence of Nick Kyrgios. I think it's entirely genuine and very heartfelt and very, very well put, it has been this week. But it might very much play in his favour tomorrow.
Might do. Oh, Joe Wilfried Tsonga has just come into the interview room, probably carried in after his epic against John Isner. But great to see Tsonga playing at this level. But just to finish off the Kyrgios chat, Simon, it always strikes me when I see Kyrgios and Murray to some degree, they do remind me a little bit of John McEnroe. And I always remember McEnroe saying years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, about Bjorn Borg, that he was always behind me. He was always on my side. And I used to think, if Bjorn Borg's behind me, to hell with everyone else. And I get the sense that there's a bit of that with Kyrgios and Murray, in that Kyrgios thinks, well, Murray backs me up, you know? I don't really care what anybody else thinks because I've got respect for Andy Murray. But Catherine makes an interesting point, doesn't it? Can Kyrgios detach the respect that he has for Andy Murray to beat him tomorrow?
Hey, we've got to hope that when Kyrgios finally does register a major win against Murray, Murray doesn't walk out of the sport, which is what Borg did, wasn't it, in that instance in the US Open. Yeah, there was a lot of questions in the press conference trying to raise this question of whether Kyrgios is weaker against Murray because he likes him so much. And he sort of tried to... didn't really go one way or the other, did he? He sort of acknowledged the possibility without necessarily being quite clear. I guess in his own mind, he doesn't necessarily know. I'm trying to think of the three. They played three Grand Slam matches in the last 18 months.
Australian Open, which was...
They're going to complete the Slam, in a sense, because they'll play four times in 18 months, which is very unusual for guys to play so often in the big matches. Now, I remember one of the hardcourt matches, Andy kept the ball round about his ankles, because he doesn't really like it low down. He's got that amazing loose arm. So if he comes up, if he gets it sort of waist height to chest height, he just slaps it, particularly on the forehand side. But if you get it around his ankles, he can get a bit gangly. And that was one match that Murray won with very low balls. I think it might have been US Open. And there was a French Open match where Kyrgios had a bit of a brain fade and played a ridiculous tweener, didn't he, when he didn't need to, and sort of lost it a bit, and McEnroe was particularly tough on him, wasn't he, on commentary that day. So I can remember a couple of those. So he hasn't, I guess he was tactically outthought in the first example, and he rather took himself out with a bizarre attitude in the French Open match. So yeah, you feel that each chapter of this saga is almost going to be a different to the last.
I thought he handled the low bouncing ball of Lopez today particularly well, mostly because it was coming on his backhand side and he didn't have to use that whippy forehand. He was paddling the backhand to great effect. I think it could be an absolute classic on Monday, one to look forward to, and one of many, Catherine, because fourth round day at Wimbledon is sensational, isn't it? We've got Cilic against Kei Nishikori. We've got Milos Raonic against David Goffin. Two matches of such similarity with the tall player against the shorter player, but both of them potentially highly competitive. We have also got Roger Federer, who will be in action. Steve Johnson's his opponent. He's in the best grass court form of his life. It's going to be a really interesting Monday. And then you add into that matches like Serena Williams against Svetlana Kuznetsova, who is in such great form today. There are matches everywhere. The problem with it is there are almost too many great matches at the same time.
Do we not end up having this discussion every time Manic Monday or Magic Monday or whatever?
You still haven't changed it yet.
Because that's what they want, isn't it? You don't know where to look on this second Monday of Wimbledon, because it's the only Grand Slam where they play all the fourth round matches in one day, and that's how they want you to feel, that there's just too much great tennis being played and you want extra eyes. Isn't that how you described yourself the other day, David?
Well, I bought a couple off Amazon, so I'm all right.
Yeah, there's some fantastic matches. I've had a couple of people predicting that Steve Johnson might beat Roger Federer tomorrow. I would be surprised at that. But then Steve Johnson, for me, is a very similar mould of tennis player to Sam Querrey, in that he's absolutely rinsing every ounce out of his talent that he possibly can. I think he would be the first to admit that he is not the most gifted tennis player. He is grinding away and making the most of what he has. He was very, very good in Nottingham last week, but he's just one of those players where the limitations of his game are very clear to see, the absolute opposite of Roger Federer. But then again, that was a similar case to what we had with Sam Querrey against Novak Djokovic the other day. So I'm not ruling anything out, but I would be surprised.
You'd be surprised. Now, we have got Serena Williams returning to form now, Simon Briggs. We saw her today against Annika Beck, who's a very nice player to watch, very accomplished player, but it was like two players in completely different worlds in terms of power. And Serena Williams now, with Garbiñe Muguruza out and Victoria Azarenka not here, I mean, there's a real opportunity for her. But fabulous interview today that I heard with Patrick Mouratoglou, conducted by Sarah Orchard from BBC Radio, who really got inside the mind of Serena Williams for us, did Patrick Mouratoglou. He lifted the lid for us and explained how he doesn't mind seeing her smash her racket at all. He's quite happy to see that. Maybe it's not good for kids to see it, he admitted, but for her, she has to get that anger, that rage out of her system. And he really gave an insight into just how stressful this process of trying to create history is for her. And we've seen it, haven't we, over the last 6 to 8 months?
Yeah, there's a bigger question actually related to this, about how much passion is appropriate in tennis, and whether the sort of 1970s codes which forbid ball abuse and racket abuse are actually appropriate in an age of...
What do you think?
I think they're a problem for the game, I really do, because beautiful and elegant though tennis is, it can be bloodless, and you're, you know, as a writer, you're up against the Premier League soap opera, you know, people being disemboweled in a Michael Gove style way every day by their managers. And it can be, if people do maintain a totally pristine facade, it's kind of all right when it becomes part of their soul and their aura like Federer. But I always thought that people who have inner fire, maybe like Novak, and doesn't show it that much sometimes, it almost detracts from the overall connection with them because they're trying to be something they're not on the court.
There are also some completely arbitrary elements to the rules, aren't there, which is that it's okay to throw your racket, but not okay if that results in you breaking your racket, even if you're trying to break your racket, but you fail to do so, you're not going to get a warning for that. But if you were trying to just gently toss your racket and by some twist of fate it happens to crack, you will get a warning for that. I mean, it does seem a little bit arbitrary, but it's the difference between ball to hand and hand to ball in football. Yeah, I mean, let's not get into it. But I can see what you're saying, Simon.
I was having a little look earlier today at some pictures of boxing stare downs and just trying to imagine, what would it be like if we had tennis stare downs at the net before a match? If a player came along and just decided, you know what, I'm not going to be cosy, I'm not going to put my arm around you for the photo, I'm going to look you in the eye and see if you've got the nerve to look me back in the eye.
Well, Anki Othavong, who's up in our Live at Wimbledon studio, well, she's been there every day, but the other day we had the Williams sisters playing doubles behind us on court 18, and she was describing an experience where she played against them in women's doubles in the first round here, and she said they went up to the net and both Serena and Venus stared her down simultaneously, and she said it was one of the most terrifying experiences of her life. She said they just wanted to walk off the court, game over, hand over the victory there and then, because there was just no point in continuing. Such was the quaking in their boots at that moment.
Awesome. More aggro, please. Catherine, let's have a look at the draw for the women's singles and just see if we can get an idea of what else we're going to see tomorrow. So we've got Serena against Svetlana Kuznetsova at the top of the draw there. It's Pavlyuchenkova who's come past Tomea Bichinski today. She's now going to face Coco Vandeweghe, who's in rich form just at the moment. I even saw our colleague Ben Rothenberg tweeting earlier today that he feels that if Vandeweghe plays Serena, that is a winnable match. Agnieszka Radwańska against Dominika Sobolkova. Radwańska having got out of jail in the earlier round match against Anna Konyu, 9-7 in the third. We've also got Katerina Makarova and Barbara Stritsova. Has that even finished yet?
Yeah, Makarova won that. She is going to face her doubles partner, Elena Vesnina, in the fourth round. So plenty of interest there.
Vesnina has been in good form this year. Simona Halep against Madison Keys is a good one. Masaki Doi, Angelique Kerber, Venus Williams, Carla Suarez Navarro, and Yaroslava Shvedova against Lucy Safarova. They're taking advantage of the loss of Garbiñe Muguruza. There's a lot of good matches out there.
I was thinking if you called those eight matches and got more than five of them right, you're doing bloody well, because there's some pretty knife-edge results coming out there, I think. I mean, obviously, Serena probably you make a strong favourite, but everybody else is going to be going out feeling quite anxious. And Sibylkova, I think, is the dark horse so far, particularly after how brilliantly she's played at Eastbourne. She feels like she's not dropping sets even, let alone matches at the moment. She and Vandeweghe, yeah, probably the two who are looking like they might do something, you know, really out of the box here.
It's going to be a great day, Monday, I think. I think they'll get through all the matches today. Looking at the sky, it's still blue, puffy white clouds. No suggestion that we're going to get bad weather the next couple of days. And my word, this is a sight for sore eyes, isn't it? I mean, today, no wonder Nick Kyrgios walked out looking so happy with life. I feel great, I don't know about you.
It's a very different scene, isn't it, to 48 hours ago when they were just on the brink of announcing the middle Sunday and everybody was braced for the news.
And I was feeling like doing a Mackinac on my microphone and just ditching this podcast forever.
Yeah, no, everybody's suddenly full of the joys and has enjoyed middle Sunday, and it feels now very, very poised and ready for the week ahead.
Sure does. Simon Briggs, any shocks tomorrow? Come on.
Yeah, well, I've always said Federer's going to go out second Monday, so I'm going to stick with that one.
Against Stevie Johnson?
Yeah, massive serving from Johnson, going to hit his spots. I mean, if he serves right, then it's hard to get the ball back.
Well, he has been very effective, hasn't he? Winning that title in Nottingham, doing damage at Queens, and now knocking out our boy, Grigor Dimitrov. Oh, well, you know.
Another coach falls by the wayside. Franco Devine is a goner, I notice. Yeah.
Oh, well. you know, it's baby steps, Catherine. Baby fed, baby steps. So, Simon Briggs from The Telegraph, Catherine Whittaker, alongside me, David Law. We are looking forward to Manic Monday after Seismic Saturday and People's Sunday. We've got to have one for everything, haven't we? This has been The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.